Honestly, I don't even know where to begin the conversation with you, Shannon, because, you know, we are such good old friends now of long-standing, what is it, 2 or 3 months? Something like that.
That's right. Our train station meet. Yes.
Yes. We met cute on his train station platform.
Right. Very brief encounters.
Which is only appropriate for the Reduced Stakes for Comedy podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 411, Meet Shannon Cochran. I want to introduce you to Shannon Cochran, one of the great American actresses. She did the national tour of August Osage County and created the role of Agnes in Bug, both by Tracy Letts. She's played a variety of roles in, nerd alert, 6 episodes of different Star Trek series, plus a movie, in addition to roles in Fringe and the film The Ring. I've seen her play both Desiree in Little Night Music and Gertrude in Hamlet. In the spring of 2015, she'll play Regina in The Little Foxes at the Goodman Theater. And just last week, she won the Joseph Jefferson Best Actress Award for her performance in the Writers' Theater production of Dance of Death here in Chicago. I had known of Shannon and been amazed by her performances, so when I saw her last spring on a train platform, I decided to be a creepy fanboy and introduce myself. And the rest is history.
The thing that I think is so cool about you, aside from the fact that you're just a fabulous person, is just you do it all as an actress. Stage, television, film, probably is not as much as you'd like, serious plays, comedies, musicals. Your performance in A Little Night Music here at the Writers' Theater, I will never see a better performance of that song, Send in the Clowns, ever, ever, ever. It was phenomenal. So I guess I'll start the conversation with saying, so you do it all. Where is the best place to live for an actor in America if she wants to do it all?
Well, I think you may be sitting right in the middle of it right now. You know, I'm a huge fan of Chicago and everything that it has to offer, and I came here 30 years ago. I've been gone since then to Los Angeles, but there is no place where I could have gotten all the opportunities that I've gotten, or at least gotten them started. My musical career, my straight theater career, my commercial and television career, my film career, everything started in Chicago, and the opportunities have only increased for actors as time has gone by. So if you're looking for a place to kind of stick your finger in every pie, I can't think of a better city than Chicago.
And you've spent time in New York and Los Angeles, and still you keep coming back to Chicago.
I do, and it may be because all of my friends are still here. A lot of them are still here, but New York in particular is wildly expensive. And so for the actor who's just starting out, or even the actor who's just a journeyman, who doesn't make 6 figures consistently, it's almost impossible to live there comfortably. Los Angeles actually is a little bit easier, and its climate, of course, has some things to recommend it. Anyone who's been through the last Chicago winter could probably jump on that bandwagon, but for my money, there's just more riches for you in Chicago, or at least that's been my experience.
Yeah, it is certainly livable and civilized, and the community is so supportive, and it's less competitive. It, like in New York, it always feels like, you know, there's a lot of F you, and in L.A., there's a lot of... so good to see you.
Let's get together. Yeah.
Which is LA speak for F you.
Yeah. right.
In Chicago, it's more, it's a little bit more like, hey, you're working. Oh, that's good. That's good. Glad to hear.
Right. It's a smaller pool here. I think there's a little bit more kind of overall support for everyone, sort of pulling for each other. And the cream does tend to rise to the top here, you know, whereas in LA, it's so arbitrary, the thing, it's opportunity, it's the fact that you could make it down the 405 to the audition today and the other person couldn't, right. It's that this celebrity turned it down so you got a job.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more of a meritocracy in Chicago.
And you've kind of, if I understand the story of your training a little bit, you've sort of just kind of said yes to things, and you've just gone and tried things, and it seems to have worked out. You have failed up.
No, I think it's true. You do have to kind of cobble together the total picture of a career and take opportunities as they come to you and know that you're ever extending your network by doing so, that everyone you meet down the road may be able to turn around and give you a hand somehow. You just don't know where your help is coming from, and I think that's explains why I've been consistently working at the very least.
And in all the list of things that I talked about that you do, you also do radio drama, as you have just done the LA Theater Works radio production of August Osage County, which you did the national tour of, right?
Correct. About a year after the show closed on Broadway, they launched the national tour, and I don't believe any of the people who were originally on Broadway wanted to continue the very hard task of bringing that play, that 3-hour and 20-minute play, to life every night. So we went on an 11-and-a-half-month tour.
Well, everybody I know who saw that tour just raved, and they saw you.
Yeah. It was a very good group. We bonded together beautifully. I saw cities I had never been to, which was thrilling for me because I didn't do that kind of touring when I was a young musical theater person. And I'm so happy to have just spent some time with that play because I think it's one of the enduring classics.
And you know Tracy Letts from Steppenwolf, and you also, didn't you originate the role of Bug in Bug? Not the role of Bug. You know, we're the title role.
The role is called Agnes.
Thank you.
Back in 1994 or 5, I had done several plays at Steppenwolf. I didn't know Tracy Letts, but I understood that he had asked a friend of mine to do a role, which she ultimately had to turn down, and she suggested me. And I went and met with Tracy Letts and several of the people that he had sort of just been writing for and hanging out with over the years. And I read this crazy play, Bug, and he said, well, we're going to London to perform at the Gate Theater for 7 weeks on a shoestring. You'll be paid $2.41, but we'll get you over there. We'll find some place for you to stay that has a roof over it, and you'll be a part of this experience. And once again, I thought, you can't say no to that. It's it's too crazy, and there are too many unknowns not to say no.
And you were doing it with Michael Shannon, right?
That's correct. Michael Shannon and I met then. He was just a 21-year-old at the time. Very, still, you know, immediately recognizable as a major talent, but crazily undisciplined and unpredictable. Any night on stage, you didn't quite know what you were going to get when you showed up with him. But it was, I'd never worked with anyone who had that kind of ethic before, and so it was a steep and very quick learning curve for me.
Well, and you've done, I mean, I do love that play, but it is like an X-Files episode, ultimately, you know? And all the people who have raved about the script are going, oh my God, it's a transformative piece of American theater. It's like, no, it's an X-Files episode, everybody relax. But it's a great X-Files episode, but you have done quite a lot of things that our nerd listeners will know, right? Fringe?
Yes.
Star Trek? How many episodes of Star Trek?
I think probably 6 episodes of Star Trek and a movie.
Right. Hashtag six episodes in a movie.
Right.
But you were also, and in the film, The Ring, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Hey, listen, don't think I haven't Googled your geek credentials.
The scary woman with the long black hair in the video, who is the mother of the evil child.
Who's moving in kind of stop motion.
Right, crawling backwards out of the television and so forth.
Cool.
So my big audition for that was demonstrating how I might throw a plastic bag over a child's head, grab the nearest rock and bash her over the head with it, then dump her into a well.
So it's just a little sense memory, really, for you.
Right. Well, I remember bringing my purse into the room that day, and there was Gore Verbinski, the director, who I had not expected to see. It was my first audition. I don't know what he was doing there or what I was doing there. Some strange evil force brought me to town. So I walked in the room. There he was. He told me the story of what it was going to be, and I was just so immersed in the story, I kept my purse with me. Thank goodness, because when I picked up my imaginary rock, it turned out to be my fist, and I began bashing myself in the chest with it. And thank God I had the purse to sort of cushion the blows of my fake killing of the child. And I had the part.
Hello, this is Andy White, Artistic Director of the Looking Glass Theater Company, and I want to thank you personally from the very, very bottom of my bottomless heart for listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? If you're in London this week, get down to the Affordable Art Fair in Battersea this Thursday night, where we will be giving only two performances of our brand new show, The Complete History of Art Abridged, our reduction of hundreds of thousands of years of art history down to 10 minutes to celebrate the 15th anniversary of the Affordable Art Fair. While you're in the UK, our tour there of the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged continues until November 20th. We'll also perform The Complete History of Comedy Abridged in Queens, New York, Clovis, and Socorro, New Mexico in the next 2 weeks. And we'll make our debut in mainland China with The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged, revised at the Wuxian Festival next week. Then in November, we'll be in St. Louis, Missouri, and begin our month-long run at the Marin Theater Company in Mill Valley, California, performing The Complete History of Comedy Abridged. And we'll perform the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in Illinois and Maryland in December. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for a specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Is it fair to say you're classically trained? Because you have a ton of classical experience.
It is not fair to say that. I went to school. I mean, this was so nutty. I went to Wake Forest University. Intending to be a French and English major, you know, because I couldn't think of anything else. And it's an incredibly difficult school academically. And I found that out very quickly. But I wandered over to the theater department, and they said, after a couple of years, well, look, you know, it seems like you have an aptitude for musical theater as well as acting, but we're just really a side business for Wake Forest. We can't train you the way you should be trained. If you are seriously considering this, you should leave.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming their motives were pure, and I had been working in a theme park that summer doing live singing and dancing shows, and I met two guys who said, oh, we're going up to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. So I just blindly did not investigate another step further and followed them up to Cincinnati, auditioned and got in, and crammed a four-year degree into 2 years by doubling up on all of my classes, and got out with the coveted musical theater degree, which I don't know how much that served me.
Well, it must get you at least into some musical theater auditions.
That's right. But I'd have to say that overall I probably learned on the job as much as anything. When I came to town, there was a couple of good Shakespeare teachers, there were a couple of good scene study teachers. And those kind of come and go in Chicago, as we know. But they helped me, and the rest of it was really, you know, kind of faking my way into the job and then just hoping nobody noticed that I didn't know what I was doing.
But there's something about the relationship between not only the skills of actually making your voice work and diction and understanding language, but then also making that next leap of imagination that gets you into the mind of a Elizabethan queen or a Star Trek alien. I mean, there seems a lot of classical actors do a lot of sci-fi and vice versa. Do you know what that is? What was helpful for you in there?
Well, the Star Trek team, you pretty quickly see a pattern emerging in that they like to hire tall people, and they like to hire people with deep, sort of powerful voices that have edges to them. So I hadn't done a lot of voice work at the time, but my voice has always been naturally low, and so I think that was instrumental in getting me my first Star Trek job. And that work is, you're right, it is like some classical training in that it's basically like mask work. You know, you're behind latex makeup, brows, ears, facial hair, fake teeth, and so you don't have those conventional kind of concerns that a young actress in Hollywood would have. Gee, am I pretty? You know, you're just bringing it, you know, in your fierce way behind this kind of wonderful mask that's been created for you. And it's very freeing.
Yeah, it's sort of gender free. It's just totally about the character.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a reason why those Star Treks, especially The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, are so enduring to people. They put a lot of effort into the story writing. They reached back to classics to sort of recreate them in the sci-fi world, and I think those resonate with a lot of different people.
Yeah. Do you go to conventions much?
I've been to exactly one convention, which was really kind of hilarious. It's the only fan mail I ever get is from Star Trek fans, and they are completely respectful, not crazed stalkers at all. They have trading cards with my various characters' pictures on them. They will send them to me in plasticine envelopes and, you know, ask me to sign them. One year I got contacted by a German company who said, we will send you 2,500 of your trading cards to sign and pay you $2.25 per card. So I thought, oh my gosh. So sure enough, a box came with the cards, the return box, several Sharpies, tape, and they said, when you're finished, please pack up every single bit of these materials and send them all back. Don't keep anything. So it's all super secret, you know.
So you sign sci-fi trading cards, and that's pretty geeky, but aren't you now in Richard Avedon's app? Didn't I hear that?
Why, yes, I am. When I was doing Bug, we were about 3 months into the run, and we got notice from Richard Avedon's office that he wanted to take a picture of Michael Shannon and me for the New Yorker. And I'm a huge Avedon fan anyway, and when we got there, he said, I would really like to do these as nudes. And so we posed in this sort of very bizarre twist on American Gothic. Instead of a pitchfork, Michael had a giant carving knife in his hand, and you know, I was his faithful companion standing beside him, but Richard Avedon, you know, who was aging at that time, I think we may have been the last theater photo he took.
Wow.
He took some other ones afterwards, but
wow,
not theater. And he got through and he said, well, I don't think I've ever put a penis in the New Yorker before, except on a baby. So we have that distinction as well.
And so Richard Avedon has now come out with an app, and they've contacted you, and your picture is going to be in this app.
That's right. That's right.
Gentlemen, start your Google searches.
Yeah, it's easy to find, actually.
So you get, the most of your fan mail is from sci-fi geeks. I guess you can consider this podcast just from as a fan mail from a theater geek. You know.
Well, that's great to get a new base of fans who are kind of following me around.
Yeah.
You know.
You don't get to go to, there are no Stephen Sondheim conventions.
There probably are, but I'm not sure I'd want to be at one of those. I never went to those parties when I was younger where everyone stood around the piano singing show tunes. That was never big on my list of entertainments.
Yeah, no, best to do that when you're getting paid for it.
That's right. Cool. And you know, you talked about sending the clowns. You know, there's so many songs that I've learned over the years, and I don't consider myself a major singer by any means. I'm an actor who sings, but something like Send in the Clowns was reborn to me upon doing it in the context of that show. I never gave that song a second thought. I just thought Judy Collins, Barbara Streisand, Frank Sinatra, those people covering that song, but I had no idea what it meant, and I didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And in the context of the show, it was amazing. And it was great for me to read in one of Sondheim's books, either Finishing the Hat or the other one, that he prefers actors who sing over singers who act. And I'm in 100% agreement.
I agree.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your nude Avedon portraits via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, bit of a bug himself, Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Jenny from Southern California. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andy White, the artistic director of the Looking Glass Theater Company in Chicago, and also one of America's great actresses. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener for 111 1233rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I'll leave you now with this teaser from the promotional video for our new show, The Complete History of Art Abridged. Enjoy.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm David Ellis.
I'm Gary Fannin.
I'm Simon Cole, and we are
the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
And tonight, we celebrate the 15th anniversary of the wonderful Affordable Art Fair.
Woo! So we're here today filming with the Reduced Shakespeare Company. We've created something called the Reduced History of Art, which is a massively entertaining, quick run-through in a somewhat quirky order of various movements of art in art history.
Da Vinci.
Sorry, folks, I have the sniffles. It is the Da Vinci cold.
Michelangelo. Van Gogh.
Ah!
Baroque.
It is now.
Seurat.
Extreme close-up.
The purpose of this performance, I think, is like everything we do at the Reduced Shakespeare Company, is basically to educate the masses, because the masses need educating. So,
but also, like art, it's up for interpretation, this performance.
Yeah, because you know, art can be interpreted many different ways.
Many different ways.
César, Renoir, Degas, Sisley, Goya, Monk, August, Rodin.
And the one who loved Tahitians by the name of
Paul Gauguin. Duchamp, Clint, Pablo, Picasso, Matisse, Cassatt, Marc Chagall. Dali, Margaret, Jackson, Pollock, now welcome Andy Warhol.
Bring your family, bring your kids. Maybe you'll learn something, but the important thing is to have fun and enjoy the art.
This was the history of ART. Go out and make history of your own.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.